This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's like a small crowd. I think more are going to be coming, but our speaker this morning, Dr. Claire Schnapp, has had a lot of experience in missions. He's been working in the northern parts of the world, ministering for 60 years now, right? And Northern Youth Programs, he's the founder of Northern Youth Programs, and that's been going for 50 years now. So I'm eager to hear what he has for us, and I think we have a blessing. Not.
Well, I got a bit of a cold here. I don't mind 50 below. But Monday, it was rainy and damp and windy. Didn't have my long johns on and all that, so I got a bit of a cold. I start coughing, it'll go away. Now, I put another... Oh, where did we go here? I had a piece to the title, Developing and Maintaining an Organizational Vision. The topic in here was just maintaining an organizational vision, but you're going to have an organizational vision. It's got to start somewhere. So, introduction. Without a vision, that people will perish. Hence, with a vision, people will flourish. Helen Keller once said, "The only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision." A vision creates energy. Then put that energy into your vision, and that creates an exciting reality. Helen Keller had a vision. She was blind, she had a vision, and blessed many. The great challenge in life is crafting a meaningful and motivational vision. Personal vision for one's time on earth. As Christians, we must envision things from God's perspective and share that vision with others to create a movement for our time here on earth. About 8 years after we started NYP, we didn't have any good management plans, and we had a vision, and we had people, and we were doing great things, we had programs, but administration was in a mess. So I was looking for some place to take a management seminar, and I found a management seminar and in Wisconsin, put on by Dr. Gilbert Peterson, the late president of Lancaster Bible College. Anyway, so at the end of the third day, I asked him to come to my room for a bit. So I told him the mess we're in. Well, he said, "One good thing, you got a good thing going. Another good thing, you're asking for help." So we met for breakfast then, and we ordered our breakfast. Then he said, "Now, before we start talking about NYP, I'd like to know what you would like written on your tombstone." Okay. I didn't expect that. So we ate our breakfast, and I didn't enjoy that breakfast very much. So anyway, by the time breakfast was done, I said, "Well, what I would like to have written on my tombstone is, here lies a man who loved Jesus, who loved his wife, who loved his kids, and loved the native people." That's still my personal vision. Most organizations started with someone being passionate about a vision. Then that person shared the vision with another person for several persons. They became excited. Hence, the movement started from one person's vision. And that's, I think of Abe Knapp. He started, Abe Knapp. He started Fresh Start. I remember talking about it, what he wanted to accomplish. Lester Miller, Life Ministries, we talked about what he wanted to do. Val Yoder, Igo. And I can name at least 18 other Mennonite works that started, that I know of, that started with a one-person vision. He shared the vision and was able to start a ministry. Now, some background. During the summer of 1958, Claire and I met at Poplar Hill, Ontario, while teaching school for 6 weeks under Brother Irvin Shantz. One day near the end of that summer, Claire and I were sitting on the shore visiting with some people from across the lake. After the visitors left, we were standing on the shore. As we were standing there, I mentioned something to Clara about the need for youth to be trained and to lead their people into the future. She agreed. A vision was born. At that time, we did not realize that a year and a half later we get married and come back to that very same spot to start a training program for youth in northern and western Ontario. In the first yearbook I wrote, break free from paternalism and colonialism and lead your people. And many are doing that today. I believed in them as fellow believers, even though they were so young. Back in 1955, I had a very serious car accident. On a hospital bed, I dedicated my life to Christ, to the Conservative Mennonite Church, and to Conservative Mennonite missions. That was my vision for life. So when I couldn't forget Clara from the summer, and I was going to call her to see if I could come and see her with my parents, and see her parents, when we went for a walk, I said, I'd like to start a correspondence with you, but there's two questions at first. Would you be willing to join my church? Number two, would you be willing to go anywhere in the world for missions? After a few months, the answer was yes. I was happy. That vision has stood us in good stead for over 50 years. Personal vision, couple vision, family vision, organizational vision, and in that order. Personal vision, couple vision, family vision, and organizational vision, and in that order. If you get it out of that order, you have a lot of heartache. In 1966, Clara and I were led to expand our ministry by moving to Dryden, moving from Poplar Hill to Dryden, Ontario. I remember one day when I went to my bedroom for my devotions, my Bible was on the dresser. It was open at Matthew, Acts 16. And what just jumped off the page was, come over and help us in a straight course. I knew what that God was calling us to do. So by this time, many Navy youth were moving out of the communities, northern communities, to urban centers, and they were plagued with problems. Three, our Northern Youth Program began with established points and values to fulfill the vision. One, there was a vision to help build Christian families and Christian leaders for the churches and communities in our region there, in Northwestern Ontario. This did happen and is happening. And praise the Lord for that. Number two, value. We wanted people from the Conservative Mennonite constituency willing to support us as well as to send us their children and their people and hopefully their money. Three, we wanted workers to retain their home church membership. We would have a workers' fellowship, NYP Workers' Fellowship, but not a church. We wanted them to be sent by the church and we wanted them to be accountable to the home church for several reasons. It involves them a home church. And then if we got a problem in some way or another, we can involve the ministry and together we can work it out. And if we can't, then the church can invite them back home. Rather, they split off from the mission and become some independent. Four, we wanted a name that would best describe to the people at home and the people here what we're about to do. A name is significant and needs to be well chosen. Some toyed with the idea of Mennonite Indian Youth Mission. That seemed to be too denominational and too racial. Finally, we ended up with Northern Youth Programs, and that name has served us well over the 50 years. By the way, we were having our 50th anniversary at Lancaster Bible High School in August. I forget the dates, but what happened here in Rio? Five, we wanted a logo that would embrace the vision. Reaching, teaching, serving. We used to have it in a bigger eagle logo. And then they wanted a smaller eagle logo. So I put reaching, teaching, serving in this way on our letterheads. Six, we wanted a mission vision statement that would embrace what we were about. Hence, our vision mission statement was and is. Our vision mission statement is to partner with Aboriginal Christians to evangelize the lost among them and disciple believers among them and develop a people for Christian service to their own people. 7, staff commitments. We want a staff to make a commitment to conservative Mennonite convictions. B, we want a staff to work interdenominationally while remaining firm to our own convictions, their convictions, yet respecting other people's convictions. We wanted full-time missionaries. We didn't want a missionary that had a part-time job in the community. We want full-time missionaries devoting everything to the vision, the mission statement, and to the purpose of the organization. We wanted them to sign an annual statement to support the NYP standards, procedures, and policies. This is preferably done during annual evaluations. We wanted them to commit themselves to using Matthew 18, the principle of Matthew 18, in dealing with problems that may arise among the workers. And then 8. We wanted to establish a board of members who would and could buy into our vision, buy into our purpose, buy into what we wanted to do. We did establish Northern Youth Programs in 1967 and acquire our charter in 1970. In 1968, Brother Irvin Shawn said that we could use his charter until we get our charter. That was very kind indeed. So that's introduction and some background. Now, you have this organizational chart here, and the people who developed this, their names are at the bottom. But I just put this up here, and I should get rid of this. Anyway, birth of an organization, high tolerance, a lot of hope, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of activity, a lot of commitment, high vision, more flexibility, teamwork, outward focus. We spent a lot of time on this, but I'm just going to go roughly. Solution-oriented, ends-oriented, concern for growth, and clarified purpose. Maturation, outside-in focus, pioneers, risk-takers, creative plans, refined structure, can do it, and they're always willing to experiment with better ideas. When we come over to the saturation point, inside-out focus. They want guaranteed income. They want something about retirement. They want all these things. Allocative of planners, settlers, and they guard the structure. Maybe we can do it. And it's continually refining, refining, and losing the vision. That begins the decline. Rigidity, Lone Rangers, inward focus, problem-oriented, means-oriented, concerned for the survival, their own survival, cloudy purpose. Then you have the death. Low tolerance, no hope, boredom, passivity, containment, disillusionment, personal ambitions, ends up being a social club or a self-perpetuating Mennonite colony. Amos Nash often talks about the lighthouse. And he talks about mission, the lighthouse. Oh, these people lived along the shore of the Atlantic Ocean, and sailors were running their ships into rocks, and some were drowning, and so they had this passion to start a lighthouse. So they started a lighthouse, and they were saving souls and saving ships from running into rocks, and they did, when they went in the water, they'd save lives, and they had a passion, they had a vision. They were moving, but, you know, as time went on, they became more and more self-centered and ended up becoming a social club and not saving anybody. The lighthouse wasn't always on, but they had their parties. So a group of them, a small number of them, said, this isn't working. They couldn't convince the larger number, so they moved down the shore and they built another lighthouse, and they kept on saving souls, saving people in the ocean, helping ships avoid it. He said, we don't want to let Northern Youth Programs become that, the lighthouse story. You know, in 1967, we started our ministry. And then by 1977, we had a 10-year plan. By 1987, we had another 10-year plan. By 97, we had another 10-year plan, continue refocusing the vision, mission statement, to according to new things that may be coming on. 2007 and 2017. So that's 50 years of continue redefining the purpose, and you have a copy of that. Now, it's up to the new administration, new board, to go from 2017 to 2027, and then on to 2037, and I may not be around then, and then 2047. But you may dream, may look into the future and be planning for the future. I supervise this, manage this. Now, they'll have to manage that. I could talk a long time about transitions. But, I mean, you're the founder, director for 45, 47 years, and you give up being CEO, then you give up being board chairman, then you get off the board, and everybody else making all the decisions. And I asked for a piece of ministry to continue to teach people in the Arctic, to help people in the Arctic. And they gave that, and I'm happy. Do I like everything they're doing? Not really. But generally, I do. And I support them. What else are you going to do? You know, you get bitter and angry and die young. Or you can get mad and leave, start something new. This age, it wouldn't work.
I wouldn't let him.
After 57 years of marriage, I listened to her voice. And when we got married, she was the quiet, shy one. I was the angry, buoyant one. That didn't work very well. So 10 years after marriage, she got depressed, I got depressed, and we went to her help. We got ourselves straightened out. She's no longer the quiet, shy one. She wasn't born quiet, shy. She read these books on personality types. This is me, the quiet, shy, nice one. But it wasn't her. I like this wife better than the other one. Sometimes I say that. People say to Clara, what happened to the first wife? Anyway. The feud.
Still the same one. No, different.
Very different. Well, that's a bit of comments on the organization.
Clark,
yes.
Are you going to talk about bringing it out of the deaf? Or is that coming later in the presentation?
We're up here somewhere.
But are you going to
for talk organizations
for any
that
pardon?
For organizations that are at decline or saturation, does this session talk about?
It's never too late.
Start. Okay.
To start. We just have to start, and then just take, the farther down here they are.
The harder
it is. But it's awfully difficult if it's down there.
Is it a way to...
Pardon?
Is it a way to get out of there? Or what would you recommend to get out of there?
Well, you have to find somebody that has a vision to take it. You have to find someone who has the vision to take it. And then convince the board or get a new board.
Or let it die, so start over.
Mm. And that, I'm glad I ever came to that point. But I've seen those.
Okay.
But and some have just died and gone off the map. And some have revitalized themselves, maybe down here somewhere. But somehow they didn't maintain the vision. They didn't motivate the vision. They didn't pass on the vision. So take that for what it's worth. And you can do research on this and get it online and see more of what they have to say. You can, on this, the information on the bottom there. You can do, it's on Google. We already checked that out. All right, I'm going to move on here anyway. Now, we want to move into the composite of management work. An organization, the organizational vision is maintained through good management procedures. I owe a lot to Dr. Gilbert Peterson, late president of Lancaster Bible College, that helped us put a management structure together that has carried us. Management work is the same for the chief executive officer of your organization as it is for the CEO of the world's largest organization. It differs only in degree and sophistication. It involves planning, leading, organizing, and controlling. PLOC. Planning, leading, organizing, and controlling. Some think, controlling, that sounds too rigid. All right, then planning, leading, organizing, and evaluating. Continually, constantly reevaluating. Plow. Take your pick. Composite of management work. Planning. Planning. Predetermining tomorrow's end results in keeping with the vision, mission, statement. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. If he isn't directing our paths, it's all to no, it's no avail. He has to be directing our paths. On all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And that's very important. So, we have 8 points under planning. As we move along, there's the number of points get less. Objectives. A, objectives, targets, and results. Trends to watch. Social trends, theological trends, technological trends, political trends, economical trends. Watching the trends. Way back in 1 Chronicles 12:32. And the children of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do. We really need to pay attention to social trends, theological trends, and technological trends. I mean, 30 years ago, I had this big overhead projector like that. I had to carry it all around everywhere I went, and I had all these accordion files filled with plastic acetates, and I would scribble all over them like I do here. And then our daughters would have to spend an hour or two after every teaching session erasing all that, and their hands are all red, white, and blue. But now, just one click, it's all gone. Little tablet. Much lighter than that. So we need to pay attention to the trends. B, forecasting, estimating tomorrow, dreaming. The heart of a man devises his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. Very important. The Lord directs his steps. We must allow for adjustments. Organizations are fluid and dynamic. Forecasting, programming, sequence, and priority of action. Programs are needed. We know what the programs are, but then we need to know what administrative structure needs to be behind carrying on those programs. Secretarial services, fundraising, and even garbage collection and disposal. All this has to be planned in if you're going to have a smooth running organization. Scheduling, attaching the clock and the calendar. And that's, you know, personally, attaching the clock to you, wherever your place is in the organization, and to your unit, and to the organization. Depends on your level of leadership in the organization. There needs to be budgeting. Budgeting, allocation of total resources. Not only money, but land, vehicles, buildings, and people. People are your greatest asset. Take care of your people needs, and you got a great organization. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later down the way. And then there's procedures. Procedures. How to do specific work. Procedure manuals are very important. But you don't give a new staff member a procedure manual and say, here, you read it, and then you'll know what your job is. It has to be done face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, bright breath to bright breath. These are the procedures for your position. And this is how you're going to be evaluated in 6 to 12 months. They know how they're going to be evaluated. That helps them a lot. More on that later. How to do specific work. Just give manuals can sit on shelves and get all dusty and have no meaning at all. Policies. Standing answers to reoccurring questions. Write them down. But they need to be written down. But again, the standing reoccurring policies need to be done face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball. You need personal involvement, and the vision needs to be foremost. In your management manuals, the vision has to be in there. In your job description, the vision has to be in there somehow. You've got to develop your vision, and then you need to maintain it through these various procedures. And motivate that their work, help them to see that their job, how it fits into the organization. You know, Bill Peterson used to tell this about, you know, he walked up when he walked up to a construction site and this guy was mixing mud. So what are you doing? I'm mixing mud. So he goes a little farther around the construction site and he finds a guy pushing a wheelbarrow of bricks. And he says, so what are you doing? I'm building a cathedral. The one guy was just mixing mud. The other guy, he was building a cathedral. You've got to keep them motivated for the overall vision. I can't say enough. The vision should be above, inside door, should be above everybody's desk, it should be in the manuals. The vision statement. But then you as a leader, their supervisor, need to move it with a passion. When the vision is lost and not passed on, the organization begins to disintegrate. And you need to do it over and over and over again. I did it for 50 years. Now I can just concentrate on teaching. But I had a spare time from teaching and ministry to do this work. Standing answers, reoccurring prayer. Now to leading. Motivating and guiding people. The vision statement. Yeah, we talked a lot about that. It needs to be first, foremost. Decision-making. Each person needs to know what are their freedoms for decision-making and what are their boundaries. And then they need to be evaluated. Are they doing what they need to do? Are they getting into other people's areas of work? They need to know what their job is. And then it needs to be spelled out in a job description and a procedures manual. And they need to know what you're going to use, what's the evaluative instrument you're going to use to evaluate them in 6 or 12 months. They need to know what that is. So, you know, when a guy gets a job description, he also gets with it the evaluation, 24 points, scale from 1 to 15. And this is done face-to-face. I'll come back to that a little bit later. Communicating. Creating understanding. Written as much as possible, but to avoid confusion, but it must be explained verbally so the passion and the vision is there. People, then you go verbally, but you leave a written copy with them. Motivating, inspiring, encouraging, and motivating people to act positively, to keep the vision clear, to work on negative attitudes. Negative attitudes towards self, others, authority, and life in general are your worst organizational enemies. Negative attitudes. When you see them, you need to address them right away. Because negative attitudes are a great detriment. You know, Clara and I, and Bob Kaufman and Alvin Hostetler, our first two 1W guys, just had bought Beaver Lake and we were developing that thing. You know, I'd sit down with Clara and I sit down with Robert and Alvin, and we go over what's the vision, what we want to do, and why we're doing it. Why are we building this cabin? Why are we building that cabin? What's the purpose? Keep people motivated. It starts very young, but then it has to be carried on throughout the organization. And then selecting people. Choosing people for specific works and positions. Many people fail because they are put into positions that don't fit their abilities and interests. Maybe you have to do that short term. If you're feeling a significant position, you don't have someone to put in there. A short-term person, but long-term people need to be selected well. That's a big part of management. 6, developing people. Developing people help improve their attitudes, their skills, and their knowledge. DVD courses, seminars, workshops. Invest in your people. Invest in your people. And sit and take time to spend time with them. Invest in your people. What ideas were they would like to develop more? What would they feel their weaknesses are? What are you, as their supervisor, whoever it is on the flowchart? Now, organizing, planning, leading, organizing. Arranging and relating people and work. This may be performed effectively with understanding the whole. Are they mixing mud? Are they building a cathedral? No. Under that, A, delegation, entrusting responsibility and authority to others, and creating accountability for results. Each needs to know the job description, then they need to know how they're going to be evaluated, And this is the same from top administrative people down to janitors, whoever. They're not just janitors. They are building a kingdom of God. B, establishing and maintaining interpersonal human relationships. This is a biggie. Creating the human conditions for working together. The clearer the vision, the clearer the motivation, the better things are going to wear out. The better the vision, the better things will go. The job description needs to be clearly defined. A written statement of end results, activities, and organizational relationships, and accountability, detailing a person and his job within the organization. There are three basic questions that Gil Peterson always said most missionaries ask. What's my job? Where can I go for help? What's my job? How am I doing? And where can I go for help? You answer those three basic questions, and you will have happy people in your organization. Here's your job. Here's your evaluation, and here's where you think or we think you can go for help. Three basic questions. Answer those. If anything else, you don't remember anything else, remember that. Answer those questions for your workers at any level, and you're going to have a happy organization. Flowcharts, fitting people into the organizational structure. Everyone needs to know where they fit in the organization, what are their responsibilities, where is the next person's responsibility to start and stop. Flowcharts. It can be very simple. There's a CEO, maybe he has three unit managers, and then the people under him. And so everybody knows where they fit in the organization. Flowcharts are very important. If you're going to maintain and carry on the vision. Now, controlling. Block. Controlling. Keeping the entire organization vision and work of the individuals on target. Performance standards, a written criteria for evaluation. And they need to have that when they get their job description so they know how they're going to be evaluated. And you're answering three basic questions. This is your job. This is how you're doing. This is where you go for help. Invest in your people. Then there's the performance standards, evaluations. I would say that this was one of my highlights in management, in leadership. Annual evaluations of key men. I figure out a nice, quiet place where we can go for 2-3 hours. When I do the annual evaluation, it's at least 2-3 hours where we can sit and talk, no interruptions, cell phones off, eyeball to eyeball, and you're really connecting heart to heart about their work, about the vision, and what's their job for. Those were the best times of my administrative work over the years, evaluating key people.
And would staff say they were some of their favorite times too?
I will show they value that. Undivided attention from their supervisor for 2-3 hours. They were all busy. But invest in your people. They feel cared for. Oh yeah, very much so. Thanks for the question. And then suggest areas where they need more training. You know, invest in your people. If they want to get a BA, we help them get a BA. If they want to get a master's, we help them get a master's. And that's another reason we were able to keep some members long-term, investing in them. Then we had for the single ladies, you know, after they're there for a while, and, well, you know, we don't have a husband, we don't have money, we have to go do something to save money. So Merle Burkholder came up with this idea of a single ladies pension plan. Every year, so much money goes in the bank, it's invested. Every next year, the same amount, so much, again, bigger. And so this accumulates 60, 80,000, if they stay long enough. So they have something to use if they, when their health allow, doesn't allow them to stay anymore. They feel cared for and treasured and valued. A single lady pension plan has been a great thing. So, training, yes. But some of my most difficult times was going into evaluation, knowing that this person needs to terminate for these reasons. But I do it gently. I don't send them a letter. You don't do those naughty things by an email or a letter. You do it personally, eyeball to eyeball, because you still want to have them feel you care about them, but they don't fit the organization. They don't fit in. And here are the reasons. If you send an email, you're going to crush them. If you sit down and take time and talk it out, you value them. Invest in your people, invest in your people, invest in your people. Conclusion. A ministry organization needs values, vision, passion, clarity of roles, evaluation, and development plans to be effective. And you do have a sheet of our every 10-year evaluation. I mean, vision statement. The goals. Now, you know, the new board has two new members and the new ministry. They'll have to figure out the next one. As I said earlier. If they want to ask me questions, that's fine. If they don't, that's okay too. bibliography. There's some books that meant something to me over the years. Visionary, the guide for discovering and maintaining personal vision, and that's critical if you're going to lead an organization. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. And you know, the way out, you can get the names of these books and authors so that you can it's back there. Some of you pick them up on the way out. Master Plan for Leaders, a Biblical Perspective by the late Dr. Gilbert Peterson. And Peter Drucker, great management person in the years past, no longer living, but his works are continually affecting management structures. And so then one of his disciples, Bob Beaufort, who helped start establish the Salvation Army. And they're a big organization, but it's based on Drucker. And this Bob Beaufort was a disciple of Drucker. And it's another motivational book. And then the most effective organization in the U.S., Salvation Army. Those books meant something to me, and you can look at them, or you can get them on the hook or order them online. I think that's what I have to say. Any questions, comments?
In the evaluating of staff, and you mentioned you have some ideas that need terminating, how do you handle that in a way that the individual doesn't feel like this is an attack on him as a person? Just because sometimes they can feel like they're defective as a person, like their character. Maybe sometimes there are those issues. But how do you deal with that, particularly? And you evaluate them in a way that maybe this is what you should do?
Oh, yes. That's dream with them. Envision with them for something different that might fit the personality better. Or, go with them these issues. And come back and we'll talk. I've done that too. Mm-hmm. You look for the good. In evaluation, you're always looking for the good and the negative. Whether you keep them or whatever. No one's perfect. People like to know what you see are weaknesses that can help them develop.
What are some things you've learned in recruiting people, maybe in that this is who you want or who you advertise yourself as, and then you get somebody and they find out, oh, this didn't fit us? What are some things that you've learned maybe in how you present a job description to people, qualifications? Because sometimes people can grow into a certain qualification or something needed, and other times they don't. And
it's highly personal, mm-hmm. based on the individual. But you want to crush them, because everybody has good points. Mm-hmm. I see you fit better in this kind of ministry, this kind of work. But then you also give them some ideas where you feel they can develop. We take a few back years, a few years later. Mm-hmm. And we say, you know, if you work on these things, here's some ways you can do that. But, you know, yeah, that's how I would answer that. You want to make them feel cared for. Mm-hmm. You have to terminate them. You want to give them reasons why. Maybe they agree with you. But you're the employer. But it's, again, not by email. Mm-hmm. Not by memo. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the courage to do face-to-face, you're not a good leader. Mm-hmm. Look at another job.
Whose job is it to develop a vision? The administrator or the board?
Well, for many organizations like ours, IGO, Well Yoder, Fresh Start, they gave that. The vision came with a man. And then he maybe had a few staff. And then he wanted to start an organization. Then he has to recruit a board that agrees with the vision statement and can fit in and help make that happen. Now, there are organizations that started a group of men. They even have a group of men. Some men, some had an idea. You know, Lauren Miller at Colorado New Horizons. I know him for years. He had a vision. We talked about it before. And then, I feel like they started a little bit, but then he got that. I'm speaking to your question. Ask it again.
So, like, just use New Horizons, for instance. If they're going to work on their vision, or if they're going to try to redefine it or whatever, is it the board that's in position now, is it their job to redefine the vision, or is it the administrator of New Horizons' job? Should the board come to him and say, define your vision, then we'll talk about it, or does the board define the vision, administrator put it in place?
A very good question, I think. That. The answer to that is, it's both. Maybe the board chair, one of the board members, gets an idea, and then they bring it to the administrator in the next meeting. Or the administrator. I think most often, vision comes from the administrative team, because they're on the ground. Mm-hmm. But it can come either way. But either way, they've got to work together. Mm-hmm. And our new administrative team and the board are working on that. And they're going to do all right. I can only speak to your question.
Yeah.
It's not either or, it's both
ends.
Kind of question on that. The example of most organizations starting with kind of one key founder. What has been your experience when there's co-founders? Or are you pretty strong on, I'm not talking about later in other stages of growth, but in starting organizations that there's one person in charge.
Well,
with helpers, or what do you think?
From my experience in watching missions over the years, it was one man with a vision, and I shared very early. Faith goers. I sat in those committees before I ever started. But they had a vision. And they started sharing it.
So I guess my question is in how many, do you have examples, has there been times where the founder had somebody that was almost a co-founder, or is it pretty much always very clear that it only works if there's one central figure?
In a way, Amos Esch and I were co-founders,
right.
But I was the leader.
Right.
We worked together for 35 years. That's all. Yeah.
So it can work, it just there has to be one person that's clearly defined as.
There's probably not a 50-50 is what you're saying.
Right. I don't see it as 50-50, but
right.
They agree together,
right.
And somebody joins with it. But then you've got to maintain it.
I was just going to ask, have you watched churches wrestle with
a session like this? And does that belong in church?
I think there's a lot of similarities, but I've never worked in the church framework. But you need a vision for the church, and you know who's in charge and what the responsibilities are. And your church needs a vision statement. A lot of churches don't even have a vision statement. They exist because they exist. And that's dead end street.
Don't you dare evaluate anybody.
You're wondering about the evaluation process.
Well, I think in churches there should be evaluations of how they do it. If the bishop can't do it, what are you going to do? Anyway.
That's the next workshop.
That's the next workshop.
Yeah, time to close the interval, but it's not very main, so it shouldn't take you long to get to your ministry focus sessions. But thank you very much, Claire.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed that, and you're dismissed.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.